abandonedlife.radio.
The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
Abandonedlife.radio.
The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
Abandonedlife.radio.
Richard Murphy.
Hello, Richard. This is Nori Hunter up in Glasgow from Indie Live Radio. I wonder if you could have a chat with us about the JERS figures that have just come out.
Indeed.
Thank you, Richard. Now, you're a professor at the School of London.
City University London, yes.
Yes, at University. And you're a tax expert.
So people say.
Well, we'd like to get... it's mid-August again, you know, and it's JERS time again when us...
Indeed.
When us non-economists try to grapple with the significance of JERS figures, what do they actually tell us?
What do the JERS figures tell us? The answer is, if I'm completely honest, not a lot.
Not a lot.
Why is the a reason for saying that? Yeah. Look, the obvious follow-on. Look, JERS is about the way in which the UK government effectively accounts for the allocation of income and expenditure within the UK as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I made the point very carefully, because if you actually look at the UK-wide data on the allocation of income and expenditure to regions inside England and to Wales and to Northern Ireland as well as to Scotland,
yeah,
you'll find that actually what it shows is that London is phenomenally successful.
Yes.
The southeast of England is pretty successful. The east of England is okay, and everyone else is creating the most enormous deficits. Scotland is not the biggest by any means, by the way, although there's this great furore every August that Scotland is in this terrible financial position and is a burden to the rest of the UK, which is exploited by some for their own political purposes. The northwest of England is much worse, just to make it clear.
Yes.
So what do the latest figures show? They show that depending upon how you account for North Sea oil revenues,
mm-hmm,
Scotland by itself, the 5 million or so people in Scotland, generate over half of the total UK national deficit in the last year. Now, if I can be honest with you, that is simply not true. And my reasons for saying that,
yeah,
partly as an economist, mm-hmm, and partly as an accountant. Now, as an accountant, I will tell you that if somebody wants to make up a set of numbers to show how costs are allocated to anything, they can come up with an answer that suits their purposes.
Of course.
So, once upon a time, governments used to make up figures to show that railway lines were unprofitable by shifting the costs around and close loads of them, as Scotland knows too well.
Indeed.
And all sorts of things have happened in time because governments want to prove an outcome, and accountants can simply manipulate the numbers. But in this case, there are all sorts of reasons why the numbers are manipulated. So, most of the figures in JERS are not figures for Scotland.
Yes, that's an interesting point.
I mean, 26 figures are involved,
yep,
and most of those are actually based upon UK-wide data. So whilst we now know, for example, figures for local authority taxes in Scotland, we should know that number,
uh-huh,
and we've got some idea about income tax in Scotland now, because of course there is a Scottish Tax Authority.
That's right.
We also know that the Scottish Tax Authority hasn't been that good at actually identifying those who are actually resident in Scotland and not.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that very large amounts of tax are collected for which we have no Scottish data at all. So,
yes,
for example, VAT, which we all pay every time we go to a shop,
is
not collected as Scottish data. So it is guessed on the basis of what it is believed that people in Scotland buy. Now, I'm not dismissing survey-based data, but it's not very reliable for this purpose, and it can be massively out. Surveying a relatively small number of people across the country as a whole, and in Scotland, only 2,000 or 3,000 at most,
mm-hmm,
and saying that that proves the level of VAT paid in Scotland is, I'm afraid, pushing the boundaries of credibility.
Well,
likewise, to claim that the profits of every company are split between the rest of the UK and Scotland by review is ridiculous. I mean, I literally mean ridiculous. That is not possible, that anybody can allocate corporation tax correctly, and so on. So these data are not true.
Well, the thing is, could just stop you there before we go on to the next problem. Why is it then that Richard Leonard and Ruth Davidson up here are saying this proves that Scotland would be a basket case if it became independent? We rely on Britain to bail us out because we've got the biggest deficit.
Can we
honestly say they're lying?
I'm not going to say the word lying, but they're not telling the words. They're not telling the truth. Either because, and let's give two reasons for this, they don't understand the data.
Oh, right.
And they may not.
Yeah.
Because they are not economists, and they haven't thought about it. Perhaps that's okay, but they do need some education on what the data really means and why it's been prepared and what it really says. Or alternatively, they don't want to understand the data, which is a different accusation altogether.
Well, that's right.
They want it to prove that Scotland is dependent upon the rest of the UK and therefore remains part of UK as a whole, and this is an anti-independence case. Now, I think that the second is probably true, and the first might also be true. Mm-hmm. They want it to look as though this is the case. But the reality is, and I've looked at this with some academic colleagues, mm-hmm. and I've read their work, and I've spoken to them, large amounts of income from Scotland are actually recorded in England, and the tax paid on it is recorded in England, but the income really arises in Scotland. For example, most financial services take place in London and are recorded in London. Every time you pay with your contactless card, a fee is paid. Mm-hmm. The fee is paid to a bank.
That's
that income will be recorded in London. Insurance will be recorded in London. Most interest paid will be recorded in London. And for some households, that's an enormous amount of money. Yeah. And so on. So there's a massive outflow of money from Scotland into England. We don't know the true imports or exports from Scotland. Despite what people claim, we have no real idea what Scotland actually imports and what it actually exports. So that part of this equation is simply unknown.
Unknown, indeed.
And literally unknown.
Yeah.
And all economists agree on that. We are therefore looking at data which is simply unreliable. And JERS itself says, and this is very important, JERS says that it is not a suitable indicator of what Scotland would be like if it was independent. Of course it isn't.
Of course it isn't.
If Scotland was independent, Scotland would have its own data. Scotland would have its own tax system, I sincerely hope. Scotland, in my opinion, should have its own currency.
But isn't the case, Richard, that all accountants have different versions? If you give them a set of numbers, they come up with different answers. There's Kevin Haig, who I think you know quite well. He's come out with some interesting answers.
He's not my biggest fan.
He's saying Scotland is £2,000 better off by this union dividend we've got, and JERS figures prove it. I've still to figure that one out.
He claims that more is spent per person in Scotland than in the rest of the UK.
He does indeed.
Now, let's also, therefore, look at this side of the equation, about the spending side. Again, the spending side of the data is not right. And I'm sorry to tell Kevin this, but actually, he really, really ought to think about this. Because some evidence I gave in Holyrood a while ago is this. Mm. If you're going to do a proper set of accounts, and it's really going to tell the truth, you have to calculate each side of the equation on the same basis. But what actually happens in the case of JERS is that they're not calculated on the same basis.
Mm-hmm.
So the income side is that which is recorded in Scotland. And as I've just pointed out, an awful lot of Scottish income is not recorded in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the expenditure side is the expenditure for Scotland. And a lot of that is spent in England. But the tax paid on that is not credited to Scotland. So there's a complete bias which guarantees a bigger deficit than is true in the figures. But also a lot of that expenditure is stuff that Scotland doesn't want, wouldn't buy, and if it was independent, would have nothing to do with. So it's highly likely that expenditure on HS2, which is a rail line which is never going to come near Scotland, is in here, and we all know that ScotRail is underinvested in.
Mm-hmm.
So we're picking up costs on these Scottish data, which is not true, and for a nuclear deterrent, which I think is highly likely.
Yes, that's a big one.
Scotland
indeed.
So
indeed. We've gotten messages through no wonder London's booming when councils like Tiny Click Manager pay out £750,000 every month in PFI debt. Scotland has over 80 PFI schemes, many funnelled out of Scotland to London vultures employing tax dodgers. That's one message that's come in. He's not far off the mark there, is he?
No, he isn't, whoever sent that message in. And in fact, I did put up an analysis. Look at the Tax Justice Network recently, who did some analysis of the PFI scheme involving the Scottish Police Training Centre.
Oh, yeah, in East Kilbride.
Yeah. I mean, that is owned by a myriad, masses of companies. I can't remember how many it is. Some of them are in the USA, some of them are in tax havens, and all the rest are in London. Mm-hmm. And we are talking about layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer, and I haven't said enough layers yet, of companies which own that operation, all of which are paid, all of which earn a profit, all of which earn financial services fees, and none are in Scotland.
Wow.
So the Scottish economy and the Scottish Police Service and Scottish taxpayers who are supporting that service are all funding the benefit outside Scotland. Now, Scotland shouldn't be doing that. That income should be in Scotland. We don't need that. Mm-hmm. An independent Scottish government could actually look at ways of refunding, I believe, ways of refinancing its PFI arrangements now. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's straightforward.
No,
it's not. I'm saying there wouldn't be complications. I'm a realistic man. I've been around for a long time. I'm an accountant as well as an economist. I know the law. But the point is, this all distorts the figures.
Well, it does indeed. And but the thing we've got to fight against up here is Jamie Green, MSP, Tory. He says yesterday's JERS were a damning indictment of the SNP's abysmal record on the economy. Craig Munro is saying, according to UK records, India recorded a deficit every year for 180 years during British rule. Over the same period, Britain extracted £44 trillion of wealth from India. It seems some accountants are still at work.
Look, the point is, and this is really important, is that this set of accounts, JERS is just an extract from UK data. Very little, as I said, of the data for JERS is actually specially prepared for it. Mm-hmm. It is a reflection of a bit of the UK as a whole. The UK is at present managed as a whole. The UK government treats Scotland, frankly, as a location like the northwest, the northeast, whatever, a sinkhole where actually it's not very, bluntly, it's not very interested in.
Yeah.
We know that because they don't spend in Scotland, they don't spend in other parts of England and Wales and so on. They only spend in the southeast. Mm-hmm. Now, I happen to live in the southeast of England overall, or the east of England, and so I'm a net beneficiary of this. I see it. And I understand what's going on here. But actually, what this reflects is not a failure of the Scottish government. This reflects a failure of the UK government to not spend in Scotland, to not invest in Scotland, to not promote productivity in Scotland, to not build the transport systems, to not build the green infrastructure, to not build the homes that are needed, but to do that in the south and east of England, which is as a result running a financial surplus. This is a national UK failure, not a Scottish government failure.
Indeed.
Those who are saying it's a Scottish failure are completely wrong.
And
the Scottish government cannot correct for these failures at Westminster.
And thanks for that, Richard. And you're not party political. You're just an independent observer of this. You've got no axe to grind.
I've written a comment this morning saying that I think the SNP needs to get its politics and its economics right. I don't think all SNP MPs and MSPs get their understanding right. I've been a critic of the Growth Commission. I'm not a member of a political party. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a member of a political party. I have sympathy with Scottish independence. Because I hold an Irish passport as well as a British passport, and I understand why Ireland wanted to be independent, so I understand why Scotland does, but I'm not a party politician.
There you go, and so that makes it even more clearer that what you're saying is from a professional point of view, not a...
And remember, Jeremy Corbyn used my ideas to become leader of the Labour Party.
Now, the thing is, Richard, just you spoke about the SNP there. Why are the SNP getting involved with all these figures and saying, well, they're showing Scotland in a good light, when you've actually just said that these figures are meaningless? Why do you think the SNP are trying to battle away with
this? I really find this baffling. I mean, I genuinely am baffled. I mean, I've actually written a blog this morning about what Keith Brown has had to say in The National this morning, where he said, oh, look, we can end up with a 3% deficit in Scotland. Well, who cares?
Exactly. That's what I wrote as well.
We need to have a 3% deficit in Scotland. It's like saying, damn it, we can't deal with climate change and the crises facing our country on a day-to-day basis because we've got to get the accounting right.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, I'm an accountant, and I tell you, accountancy is not that important, Keith.
No, it's not.
Actually, what matters is that we get the investment in the people of Scotland right. Mm. And what I worry about is that the SNP has not got its priorities right. The Growth Commission, I'm afraid, is about appeasing bankers.
Yes.
It is about running a fiscal rule which is inappropriate and which isn't necessary and which an independent Scotland should not need to be constrained by. I'm not saying an independent Scotland can spend recklessly. I'm not saying there's a bottomless pit of money. I'm saying these rules are inappropriate. There are better rules, and the rule for Scotland should be two things. One, invest in the people of Scotland, because the people of Scotland are worth investing in. And two, have a Green New Deal, because Scotland
needs a Green New Deal.
And why is that? Because Scotland is, in effect, the new Saudi Arabia. There is more capacity for Scotland to generate and export not just energy to a very willing customer who will be next door, that's called England, who will need renewable energy, which it hasn't got, which Scotland has.
Yep.
But also the resulting technology and skills and education, which is just as important to Scotland's balance of payments.
Absolutely.
So for those reasons, Scotland needs to become the absolute epicentre of that. And Keith needs to realise that a 3% budget balance denies the opportunity to invest at almost no cost at the moment, because the Scottish government will be able to borrow at almost no cost, just as at present the UK government actually borrows at no cost. It could borrow to invest in the future of the country. Now, that is not reckless, that is not wrong, that is what you do to create prosperity. And to put the budget balance ahead of the creation of prosperity for the people of Scotland and a green, sustainable future is just crazy. Wrong is another word for it.
Well, now, on that Green New Deal, Richard, you're coming up to Scotland soon, aren't you, to work with...
Yes, I am.
Is it Commonweal? Are you doing something with Commonweal?
I'm doing one at Yes Hub in Edinburgh on Wednesday next week, and I'm doing one with Commonweal in Glasgow on Thursday next week, both evenings.
Ah, we'll try and get along. We'll try and put these advertises a bit more thoroughly after we do the phone call. Now, what are you trying to gain from these meetings with Commonweal? And
one, a trip to Scotland.
You're always welcome. You're always welcome.
One, they're paying my train fare to Scotland. Yeah,
fantastic.
I'm coming. Anybody who offers me that, I'll turn up.
We'll put the kettle on for you, don't worry.
Okay, so the real reason. I've been involved with the Green New Deal for a long time. In fact, the Green New Deal was created by a group of economists, accountants, environmentalists and so on in London. And I've been a member of that group since its inception in 2007. It's taken a long time to come to public attention, in effect, and it's done so via the USA, quite surprising.
Wow, yeah.
We had a brief moment in sort of the spotlight in 2008, 2009, and then pretty much disappeared again until recently. Mm-hmm. But now the world, it's a good idea that time has come. The world knows now that the issues around climate science are pretty much resolved. You know, there is still a tiny chance we've got climate science wrong and there is no man-made global warming. But it's so tiny, it's about as remote as the fact that I wasn't born in 1958. It's just possible my birth certificate's wrong, but pretty damned unlikely. Well, that's about the same is true with the science of global warming.
Yeah.
It's pretty damned unlikely we got it wrong. So we've got to take action, and we now know it. The Green New Deal is about transforming our economy is to do two things. One is to obviously make us net zero carbon. The other one is actually to improve the well-being of people on the way to achieving that. Because it's quite a frightening idea that if net zero carbon was done by big business, it would actually mean probably that most people would be much worse off.
Yeah, right? that's a strange paradox, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we'll be net zero carbon. We'll put up the price of all fuel and we won't compensate by actually providing you with any extra income opportunity or whatever. Mm. Nah, come on, guys. And we're going to put up the price of all products. And we'll make the profit still, but you will actually have to pay the price. Now, this will be a seriously bad alternative. Mm. So what we've got to do is actually look at the whole issue of social justice at the same time.
Right, now, seeing on social justice, can I just stop you, Richard? Seeing social justice, are we talking about building new houses that are better prepared for the new winters that are coming up? Are we talking about electric cars? What are we talking about here in basic terms?
In basic terms, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it is actually talking about creating jobs.
Jobs?
Because they are the basis of prosperity. And that would mean actually building new houses, which are environmentally zero carbon. It is about looking at existing houses. And I know there are problems with some housing stock in Scotland and working out how to make them net zero carbon. Because, for example, there are large numbers in houses which do not have cavity walls, and therefore you can't insulate them in the same way as you can in some other places.
That's by
own. Overall, there's still a lot that are hopelessly thermally inefficient. Mm-hmm. We could be doing renewable energy. You know, vast numbers of buildings could become power stations. They literally could have photovoltaic cells on their roofs.
Yeah.
We could be doing improved tidal energy. We could be investing in the jobs to do that.
Oh.
That is the future of the Clyde, surely. That's the future of Aberdeen.
That's nirvana to a lot of Scottish people.
Sorry?
That is a nirvana. That is somewhere out in the distance. It's unbelievably challenging. It might be too tough for them to accept.
Look, I mean, let's be clear. If you're going to have a vision,
mm-hmm.
you've got to imagine things which at the moment seem unimaginable.
Yes.
And a lot of my work over the last 20 years has been about imagining the unimaginable. And the Green New Deal was, in fact, unimaginable 10 years ago. And now it's on the point of discussion.
That's right.
And for some people, it's still beyond the horizons of what they think is credible and plausible. And I accept that. But if we don't try to see what is possible, we will never get there.
Well, that's
right. That's the nature of research and development. We need to imagine that Scotland, which has one of the biggest tidal reaches of any country in the world, more tidal flows that it could manipulate for this purpose, that it could do that. And of course, Scotland has massive potential wind power, which is still not fully exploited by a long way. So there's loads of potential energy and loads of, therefore, job creation opportunity, which creates the manufacturing. But there's a spillover too. Because I remember a lot of those jobs, and I'm going to be quite clear about this, sound rather like what many people think of as male jobs. Now, we're not in a world which is male-female split anymore. I'm only too well aware. I have teenage children. The world does not split in that way anymore. But just in case anybody thinks that, this is also about making sure that the whole of society benefits.
Exactly.
That we look at how the benefits of this... It's not growth.
Mm-hmm.
It's reorganization, this green organization. We're not going for the old mantra of we're bigger, so we're better anymore. Mm-hmm. We're about how do we live better. How do we live better would include, of course, better spending on social facilities and education and childcare and other things, as well as these, because people who are at work can afford to contribute to all those other costs that society will benefit from.
Indeed. Now, Richard, can you remind us of these dates again? Because we're rapidly running out of time. You're going to be in Edinburgh?
Edinburgh is at the Yes Hub, but it's not at their place. It's in, I think, the Northfield Hotel.
The Northfield Hotel.
If I remember rightly.
Yeah, we'll get that.
And that's from memory. I'm not sitting in front of it at the moment. But I think that's where it's going to be next Wednesday night. But if you look at the Yes Hub Edinburgh website, they've got the details on there.
We'll
and
get
I
that.
I think it's £10 as a contribution towards costs. Powering the room and everything else.
That's right.
So that's next Wednesday evening, and then on Thursday evening in Glasgow, Commonweal, and I think this is at their...
They're at... their offices. Kidding Park.
On the south side.
Yeah, Kidding Park.
And you look at their website as well. They're advertising it, and the meeting is in Glasgow next Thursday. And I think they're both at 7:30, if I remember right.
7:30. We'll give them a... we'll give you a shout out for both those events on our weekly roundup. We are going to we've got running out of time, vastly running out of time. Can I just say thank you very much, Richard Murphy, for coming on Indie Live Radio and speaking to me. It's been an absolute pleasure, and hopefully we'll get you back on again.
Okay, I'm happy to come. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much, Richard.
That's okay.
There we go. Thank you very much. Bye bye now. Indie Live Radio.